Good evening, Truth Seeker. Malloy here on the NOVAM Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're going to hang around this Monday evening. We've got a lot of ground to cover. So many flying monkeys, so little time. Where to begin? The Australian elections that we heard about, when did we hear about it? Saturday, Sunday? And the rejection by that company or country of all things Bush. Our great ally in the never-ending terror wars. Well, guess what? Speaking of global warming, was I speaking of? I think I was. Al Gore's returned to his office today, and a private 40-minute meeting with too stupid to chew gum and walk at the same time. Boy, I wish I'd been a fly on the wall for that one. Trent Lott becomes the latest neocon to jump ship before his term ends. First Haster, now a lot of people think something fishy is going on. No, it just has to do with the fact that the new lobbying law goes into effect December 31st. So if Lott gets out, as Haster got out, before December 31st, they can make the big bucks. I like what Trent Lott said today.
Well, I think I might go into teaching.
Yeah, sure you will. Then there's the hypocritical and ridiculous. This is the only place I agree in the history of my entire life with Benjamin Netanyahu, the peace talks, quote, going on in Annapolis, Maryland tomorrow, engineered, orchestrated by Bush as a last-minute attempt for the decider to save face as a foreign policy president, are going to go nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. In the first place, they don't have the elected representatives of the Palestinian people there. Jesus, I mean, how hard is that? Let's have a peace agreement between, or a chat between Russia and America. Representing America will be the president of Bolivia. That'll work. And finally, Dick Cheney's body part is trying to act up again. His thing in his chest that they put in there to replace his heart. Last time it was his foot that tried to break free from his carcass. You remember that. You get the feeling all his various parts hold meetings at night and try to devise a way off the vampire piece by piece. No luck so far. His dark magic is still too powerful, even after all these centuries. And moron sounds on the program from Speedy Perino tonight. My God, and you get all this free. It's incredible. Gore and Bush, it was interesting, to say the least. Gore, it must have been weird for Al Gore to show up at his office for the past 7 years, realize this drug-addled freak is still in there, but anyway, there they were, Al Gore and George Bush. If you look at some of the photos from Yahoo or wherever on the internet, I've never seen, as goofy as Bush is, I've never seen such goofy expressions as those that appeared on his face today when he's standing next to Nobel Peace Prize winner and the guy that kicked his ass and from whom he stole the presidency, Al Gore. It was incredible. Just the kind of... the kind of look that O.J. Simpson seems to have on his face every time he shows up in court and hardcore testimony is being recited against him. And Simpson sits there looking like he just ate a mouthful of boogers or something. Bush is the same way. Bush and O.J. Simpson, I swear to God, separated at birth. Anyway, the meeting, of course, as you know, was because the 2007 Nobel Prize winners were invited in for a photo op and some chatter with the president. Ah, I like the way it's reported by the AP. The two men stood next to each other, sharing uncomfortable grins for photographers and reporters, who were quickly ushered in and quickly ushered out. The vice president said of the media, "Familiar faces." Bush, still smiling, added nothing. Yeah. And then a 40-minute meeting in the Oval Office. Bush aides said it was private, would not comment on it. Gore, as he left the White House, trailed by the crack outside division of the White House press corps. Gore said to them that he and Bush spent the whole time talking about global warming. Gore said he was very gracious in setting up the meeting, and it was a very good and substantive conversation, and that's all I want to say about it. Now, remember that the White House's response when Al Gore won the Peace Prize, especially on the issue of global climate change, was less than giddy. The Bush White House tried to make it clear today that George was hosting Gore not out of obligation, but out of genuine interest. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, the ditzy chick, too much cappuccino perino, left the totally bitchin' sales at the mall today to come before the bogus White House press pool and dodge questions on a variety of subjects, starting with this one on Al Gore's visit to the White House and his first meeting with the unelected idiot since the Supremes appointed King George in 2000. One of the crack White House press corps mouth breathers said, "Can you describe for us what is happening with former Vice President Albert Gore being here with the president? Can you give us a little picture inside of the Oval?"
The president and the vice president are having a private meeting today that the president invited him to come and spend a little bit of time with him in the Oval Office prior to the event that he's having in the Oval Office in order to thanks to the Nobel Prize recipients who have represented America so well, of which Al Gore is a part.
You know, the former vice president has been deeply critical of this president's conduct in several areas. Do you think they're still upset with one another? Is there still bad blood here?
I don't believe so. I know that this president does not harbor any resentments. He never has. He was the one who picked up the phone to call Vice President Gore to make sure that he could make it to the event. He invited him to come and have a meeting with him prior to the Nobel Prize event, and I think he was very much looking forward to having the meeting.
Yeah, the same way you and I would look forward to having a bad case of hemorrhoids. What's this? Perino says, the questioner says, is there bad blood there? Do you think they're still upset with one another? Perino says, I don't think so. I know this president does not harbor any resentments. Okay, why should Bush harbor any resentments? The only thing Bush should harbor is monumental guilt and shame. He stole his freaks and his daddy's freaks and Reagan's freaks on the Supreme Court. Let him steal it. Bush doesn't have any resentments? Oh, well, that's wonderful. Another one of the crack White House press corps on Gore's visit to the White House. This reporter asked Doublespeak Dana. Dana, back to the meeting with Al Gore. I wonder just about the president's reasoning for inviting the former vice president. Does he want to hear from the former vice president about global warming? Or does he view this as an opportunity maybe to make amends or to reconcile the past? What is his thinking about that?
I didn't ask the president his I didn't psychoanalyze the president to find out why he decided to invite Al Gore to the White House. And I believe it was a presidential, gentlemanly, and a friendly thing to do to invite Al Gore to the White House. They had a private meeting, and I'm not going to intrude on that. Obviously, Vice President Gore will bring up anything that he wants to bring up. But just remember,
what does the president want to hear from? Does he want to know?
I don't know, Cheryl. I did not psychoanalyze the president to ask. Yes, it is. It's a friendly and neighborly thing to do, to invite someone to come to the White House. It's not something that was calculated.
Oh, shut up! Gag me with the microphone. Why are you asking me all these questions on Cyber Monday? Don't you know I've got orders on cameras and everything on Amazon to place? It's a friendly neighborly visit. Oh, God! Stop it, Cheryl! I'm not psychoanalyzing! Really? I'm not psychoanalyzing? No, that's already been done, Dana, and quite well, I might add. There's a book out called Butch on the Couch by Justin Frank. You might want to read it, sweetie.
You stop the counting time.
This is Nova M Radio.
Your boy's lead was getting mighty slim. And those black robes couldn't hide your Bush t-shirt there inside. You made the man with a fewer votes win. Congratulations, George. Well, it's all bought and paid for. The history books will have to write you in. Or maybe you can pass a law so the rest of us can all see how the man with fewer votes wins.
And as a child, I danced like it was 1999. My dreams were wild. The promise of this new world would be mine. Now I am throwing off the carelessness of youth to listen to an inconvenient truth.
Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
I need to shake up. I need to speak out.
There is more CO2 in the atmosphere now than any time in the past 600,000 years. 22 past the hour. Dick Cheney today. I caught my breath. When the little crawl on the or the little thing on the font on underneath the CNN anchors of breaking news, and then Cheney, I thought Cheney experienced an irregular heartbeat today. You provide the punchline. Go ahead. And is being evaluated at George Washington University Hospital. His spokeswoman said during examination, he was found to have an irregular heartbeat, which on further testing was determined to be atrial fibrillation, an abnormal rhythm involving the upper chambers of the heart. A spokeswoman added that if necessary, Cheney would receive cardioversion, a procedure that involves the delivery of an electric impulse to the heart, or 2 or 3 gallons of fresh blood from newly killed children, whichever is the more readily available. If the irregular heartbeat continues, it can cause a life-threatening complication, the formation of blood clots that can shoot to the brain and cause a stroke. The main treatment is to try an electrical shock to restore normal heartbeat. If that doesn't work, patients may need to take the blood thinner and rat poison warfarin to reduce stroke risk.
Clear.
Prairie 2 wrote in, Mike, there was some delay restarting Cheney's heart with electric shock today. They had to wait for a thunderstorm to develop over the hospital. Yes, indeed.
No, I was going to say warfarin would probably be completely useless against Cheney. I mean, I'm sure he's immune to any sorts of poisons or pesticides or radioactive spiders that could be thrown at him.
Yeah, well, we certainly don't wish any bad times to anyone, least of all our vice president.
Clear.
In St. Pete, I think it's Wednesday, is the CNN-sponsored YouTube Republican presidential debate at the Mahaffey Theater. And in St. Petersburg, city officials are setting up a perimeter today. I would assume it's finished now. A perimeter of fencing. God only knows what it is. Barbed wire. Electric fence. I don't know. Some sort of portable fencing topped with broken glass shards. Anything to keep the people of St. Pete from revving up their wheelchairs and walkers and attacking the Mahaffey Theater with the Republic. I know there's more than old folks who live there, but in order to set up this perimeter, of course, all the homeless people in St. Pete had to be moved out of the way. One homeless person, a guy referred to in the St. Pete Times as William Grandpa Shoemate, who is 59 and lives in front of City Hall, Grandpa said, "They think we're going to become invisible." He added a few other things that I can't say on the radio, but a fencing perimeter to protect the Republican candidates from what? I mean, seriously, from what? From the homeless. And my man Dennis Kucinich. Uh-oh. First, it was the UFO sighting, which is cool. Because Kathy and I saw something in the sky over the Florida Panhandle one night, as I shared with you. But Kucinich has said something now, which... I don't know. It's kind of shaken me just a little bit, being the Dennis Kucinich supporter that I am. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Blast the shards and get your money's worth. With this show, it happened out and you gotta see the show. It's rock and roll. You gotta see the show. It's rock and roll. Oh, right before your eyes. We the laughter from the skies. And he laughs until he cries. And he dies, and he dies. Come inside, the show's about to start.
I got a pretty good antennae.
What? It's about 25 before the hour. What'd he say? I've got a pretty good antennae? Yeah, it's not just Kucinich. All right, well, Kucinich had his UFO moment, which I can certainly relate to. I think a lot of us who are prime targets for kidnapping by aliens have had our UFO meeting, a moment. And Dennis apparently saw something. No big deal, only insofar as it happens to a lot of people. Of course, it's a big deal. I mean, they're trying to contact us, and we keep saying, go ahead, come on down. We want to blow you to pieces. But Dennis has done something now that I find bizarre, and I don't quite get this. He said that, where was he? He was at a house party in New Hampshire over the Thanksgiving weekend. And he told the crowd of about 70 supporters that he's thinking about Ron Paul as his running mate. Now, why? He said, well, in his opinion, a Kucinich-Ron Paul administration could bring people together, quote, to balance the energies in this country, end quote. All right, now let me see. Balance the energies. Kucinich is, for the most part, an FDR Democrat Ron Paul is, for the most part, a destroyer of everything that ever came out of the mind or the legislative process during FDR's almost four terms. So I'm not sure what Dennis means here. Balance the energies in this country. They have different views on a woman's right to privacy. They have different views on single-payer health care. They have different views on government's role in having a hand in the public's greater good. Now, it was rejected almost immediately by a spokesman for Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul. Communications Director Jesse Benton said in an email to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, when asked whether a running mate spot on the Kucinich ticket would be attractive to Ron Paul, the spokesman said, Dr. Paul and Representative Kucinich are friends, and there's a lot of mutual respect. They have worked and will continue to work together on ending the war and protecting civil liberties. However, the spokesman said, Ron wants to substantially cut the size and scope of the federal government. Yeah, he sure does. He wants to eliminate 98.6% of it. The spokesman says there are far too many differences on issues such as taxes and spending to think a joint ticket would be possible. And Dennis's wife, Elizabeth, who was asked about it after a recent Democratic candidates debate in Las Vegas, she was asked about it on a website. She said that she considered Ron Paul a great truth teller, adding that Ron Paul has, quote, voted 100% right on the war, end quote. Well, yeah. And on Sunday at this meeting, Kucinich said, think of how you could unite the country having a Democrat and a Republican on the ticket. Possibly so, Dennis, but who's the Republican? I mean, Ron Paul, Dennis, is not a Republican. Oh, God. He's not a Republican. He got elected as a Republican. He did. Teddy Roosevelt was not a bull moose. He was a Republican. But he got elected on the bull moose party, didn't he? Do I have that right? I don't like this. I don't like to read something like this. Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul. Let me see that. I could think of some other weird couplings, but that I think would be extremely bizarre. So, a great big no, Dennis. Please, Dennis, stop it. Stop it. Prairie 2 sent me an email. Hey, Mike, the Supreme Court hammered another large nail in the coffin of the Constitution today, using one of its favorite tactics. It simply declined to review a ruling made by one of Bush's right-wing activist judges. The San Diego District Attorney's Office has been showing up unannounced at the homes of welfare applicants and recipients and conducting a full-scale search of their homes, without a warrant. And no suspicion of fraud or any other sort of activity is required. In San Diego, they call these searches inspections to determine eligibility, even though they are conducted by police and not by welfare officials. The lower court in out west ruled that no warrant is necessary because, in theory, the investigators can be refused entry if the person has the nerve to do that. You see, refusal to submit to a search is construed as guilt. So, yeah, you can say go away, and then your application for public assistance will be thrown in the nearest commode and flushed. So, as Prairie 2 writes, with this ruling in place, no one is exempt from warrantless search. This ruling is based on the premise that anybody who has interaction with the government can then have their home searched to make sure they're not lying on the application. So by this reasoning, when you fill out the form for a license for your dog, you're signing away your rights. Who writes this stuff? Who comes up with this stuff? Why is the United States Supreme Court so inept? I mean, Prairie 2 has figured it out. Why can't the Supreme Court figure it out and say, oh, well, this certainly warrants, pardon the pun, this certainly warrants a closer look? Oh, no. What else we got? Trent Lott. God, what a piece of work this guy is. He's decided he's going to resign by the end of the year, which means before midnight, December 31st, 2007, because if he waits beyond that, you see, he has to wait a couple of years before he can start making the big money. By resigning before the end of the year, even if it's 1 second before the end of the year, Lott would beat the effective date for these new rules that doubled to 2 years, the amount of time former senators have to wait before they can start sucking up as much corporate money as they possibly can as a lobbyist. The new rule applies to those who leave office on or after December 31st. So I guess Lott is going to do this before midnight, December 30th. Jesus. Lott said at a press briefing today in front of a crowd of supporters, where do they get people to attend those sorts of things? I've often wondered. I don't care if it's right or left. Is there a do you call an employment agency and say, we need some people to stand around behind the microphone? Whenever I see a police superintendent or a county commissioner or a civil rights worker or a right-wing nutball or a neo-Nazi racist like Trent Lott, whoever it is, you ever notice that? There's always people standing around. They're not, they can't all be secretaries or assistants or gophers. They're just people. Where do they get these people? You have all kinds of people. The ones I find extremely interesting are the ones, I just have to admit it, the ones for civil rights advocates. Anytime you see Al Sharpton or any civil rights advocate, black or white, talking about the latest injustice perpetrated against people, you always see that, that crowd of people standing around, and there's always a couple of people with... you know, they got these funky looking hats on that with the ear flaps pulled down, and you just kind of look around like, where do we get the meal after this is over? What's going on here? Do I get paid for this? You know, where did he get? And Trent Lott, the only difference between Al Sharpton and Trent Lott is that Trent Lott has all white people who may be better dressed, but they all still have that lean and hungry look too, don't they? They're standing there like, yeah. I was in the bathroom and the phone rang and it was the staffing person said, we need you at Trent Lott's press briefing. Why? We just need you there. Come on. I have a lot of questions like that. Anyway, he and his wife Trish, you gotta love that, Trish and Trent, they apparently decided they still had enough, in his words, time left to do something else. After his 35 years in the House and the Senate. You talk about sucking at the public trough. This guy has never had a real job. Ever. He said he had nothing definite this time, but suggested he might want to teach. Oh, yeah. Trent Lott's going to teach. Yeah. Right. He's going to hold a class on civil rights laws over the history of the country. His son is already a lobbyist, and Lott, of course, is part of that group of right-wingers who voted against the ethics reform bill that included the revolving door ban. So Trent's bailing because, well, you know, I got to make some money. Damn.
I see a lot of the Bubbas who work in my administration who've shown up.
It's about 10 before the hour.
I think I know why Trent Lott's leaving.
Yeah, why?
Well, they finally finished his beautiful porch, and he just can't bear to be away from it any longer.
Is that what it is? From Bob in Groton, Mass. Bob writes, I was listening to Friday's show via podcast, and I was a bit surprised that you were surprised at the Fizzle greeting Scott McClellan's revelations. We've had perhaps a dozen bombshells go fizzle over the last 7 years. Welcome to the new normal. There seems to be a kind of journalistic Hippocratic oath. First, do no harm to Republicans. Bob goes on, there are at least two things going on in the media here, and each tends to obfuscate the other. One is the transformation of the news media from journalism to entertainment. We don't expect much from them anymore, and we often excuse their failings by this change. However, those who really examine the media uncover a bias in favor of Republicans and against Democrats and the left. A story potentially harmful to Bush either gets spun to somebody else's harm or is smothered. The same happens for other prominent Republicans. In any past election cycle, Rudy Giuliani would have been kicked out by now due to his past transgressions. You know that should a Democrat occupy the White House next, the media will repeat the flame fanning of the Clinton years. Most of us will excuse it by the lack of journalistic integrity brought on by the entertainment business. But, Bob closes, it's much worse than that. Well, regarding that, a reporter asked about the blockbuster story today at the White House press briefing that crashed and burned before Thanksgiving, McClellan's book, which implicates all the Bush crime family inner circle in a knowing conspiracy regarding Valerie Plame for spite. Reporter named Paula says, this is specific to the Office of Government Ethics, Dana, and specifically there's a few provisions in here dealing with the disclosure of classified information to unauthorized persons, as well as making false statements about any knowledge of that. I'd like to know, since only the president is authorized to allow the disclosure of this information to unauthorized persons, why, when he became aware that this happened, why did he not remove from office any member of the executive branch, Dana, that either disclosed this information or had knowledge that it happened?
Paula, we have gone through this so many times, I don't have anything to add to the public record.
Well, I just have to ask about the timing, because prior to the criminal investigation by Patrick Fitzgerald, the president said that anyone that was involved in the disclosure of the identity of Valerie Plame would no longer work for the White House. And it was only after that criminal investigation began that he changed the ground rules to anybody that commits a crime would no longer work at the White House.
Paula, the person who revealed her name has said so publicly, and that person did not work at the White House.
There was also a person that told Scott McClellan that he was not involved.
And he was the remains of that. And Perino, totally ignoring the question, said, thank you. Thank you. Well, it's obvious. There is an absolute conspiracy of silence on the part of news media. New York Times, I don't know about the Washington Post. I frankly don't give a damn about the Washington Post, since the editorial page is pro-Republican, just like the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, although the Wall Street Journal is pro-fascist and the Washington Post is just pro-Republican. But so a little blurb, maybe 7-8 column inches in Wednesday or Thursday at Thanksgiving. That was it. There's nothing here. Move on, folks. And it's dead. It's gone already. Absolutely gone. High crimes and misdemeanors. A revelation by somebody who knew, as much of a dumbass as Scott McClellan was, so much of his dumbassery was on demand. I mean, he was hired to be a dumbass. His dumbassery was what the Bush crime family was looking for. But that doesn't mean his dumbassery closed his ears. He knew what was going on. And because he feels that his ethics might have been canceled by his dumbassery, he's now written a book in which a little tiny section has to deal with or is dealing with the massive conspiracy to lie, commit fraud, suborn perjury, obstruct justice. Jesus. I mean, and these are not high crimes and misdemeanors anymore, apparently, by the Democratic Party leadership in the House and the Senate. They're just not. Of course they're not. To Republicans, the only way Bush might be charged with high crime and misdemeanor if he's caught in bed, with a live boy or a dead girl. That's about it. And even then, they would immediately start screaming that it was immediate reporting on the bad stuff in the Bush administration, not the good stuff. It's so frustrating. When I read that bit from McClellan's alleged book, which will maybe come out in April if McClellan doesn't have a heart attack or a stroke or develop some weird disease that just eats him from the inside out in about 6 weeks. You know, if none of that happens and the book comes out, what? It's going to be a yarner now? Everybody say, oh, yeah, oh, that's right. That's that book about the obstruction of justice and conspiracy and fraud at the highest levels of the Bush administration. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's old stuff. When the book comes out, that'll give Dana Perino, oh, this is old stuff. Please, please. Paula, don't ask me about this stuff. It's a matter of public. It's old stuff. Let's move on. What else you want to talk about? How about the war in Iran? Anybody want to talk about it? We took out six more cities today. Anybody want to talk about the war in Iran? Huh? Oh, God. So it's, what has happened to media in this country is just, I don't know. It makes me, I don't know if it makes me want to scream or break things, or just sit and weep. Or maybe a combination of all three. Whatever. All right. You've been sitting here listening. Already a third of the program is gone. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Back, 7 past the hour, he said as he cleared his throat into the microphone. Sorry about that. So Chuckle Nuts is being the great diplomat and healer of international six-decade-long rifts that he is, has called a meeting in Annapolis, Maryland. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. He met today with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president, sort of, and also met with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who is probably soon going to go to jail for nothing to do with the occupation of the so-called territories, but has to do with his corruption. And who else is going to be there? Just a whole bunch of people. They got a whole bunch of people coming to this meeting. Anyone from Jordan going to be there? How about Syria? No. How about Iran? No. Nobody. Oh well. The truth is, and I'll get to that in a second. This meeting is worse than a waste of time because it is Bush pretending, play acting. When the Bush crime family stole the election back in December 2000, A decision was made shortly thereafter that all the efforts made by Clinton where it concerned working something out between the factions involved in the Middle East peace process, the Bush crime family said, that diverts too much attention away from what we really want. There's no oil in the occupied territories. There's no oil in Israel. Screw that. Come on, let's go, guys. Leave them alone. Let them twist in the wind. We don't care. We don't care. So they walked away from it, as did the shoe lady, probably the most ineffective posturing Secretary of State in the history of this country. That would be Ms. Rice. So it's been sitting there festering. More death, more destruction, more hatred, just goes on and on and on. And the one voice, that of the United States, it could have done something to try once again. You know, it's been done before. Egypt and Israel worked out an agreement. Yeah, it was a payola agreement, but at least, you know, it's held since the 70s, for God's sake. But, of course, that was brought about by a Democrat. So Bush just walked away from it. And poor mouthing and whining and bitching the people in his administration about Clinton. Well, Clinton, Clinton. So now, with a short period of time left, Bush is trying to polish up his image as the great healer. So he calls this fake, phony-ass meeting. And everybody involved in this is a fake and a phony. The Palestinian leadership, the Israeli leadership, the American leadership. But before we get to the actual plan, I got something that James Risser wrote at Daily Coast that I'll share with you. Let's go to the photo op. And, of course, Bush is flip-flopping again, this time on his stated strategy toward Mideast peace. And that was, I don't care. Now, remember, they lobbed heavy criticism at Clinton for trying to do too much to get a brokered peace between Palestine and Israel. So here goes Bush. He's going to make his effort to polish up his legacy. So they're meeting. Where's the head of Hamas? Ismail Haniyeh, Hamas's leader in Gaza, has not been invited. There's a reason for that. But here's Bush talking to Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert.
It's an honor to have you back in the Oval Office. Thanks for coming to the Annapolis conference. I'm looking forward to continuing our serious dialogue with you and President of the Palestinian Authority to see whether or not peace is possible. I'm optimistic. I know you're optimistic, and I want to thank you for your courage and your friendship. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you? Son of a bitch, I'm proud of you? Now come over here. Let me rub your little bald head. Give me some luck, you cutie pie. I'm almost done condescending you. Come here. Come here. Come here, Ehud. What kind of name's Ehud? Is that a Jew name? It is, isn't it? That's a joke. I'm just kidding. I love Jews. Oh, my God. Come here. I'm proud of you. Whew. Unbelievable stuff. Now, just to continue the charade a bit further, Bush spoke with the utterly powerless Mahmoud Abbas about his, Bush's, Clinton-esque peace plan.
Thank you for working hard to implement a vision for a Palestinian state. We want to help you. We want there to be peace.
Yeah.
We want the people in the Palestinian territories to have hope.
Yeah.
And we thank you for your willingness to sit down with Israel to negotiate the settlement. The United States cannot impose our vision.
Iraq.
But we can help facilitate. The process will begin tonight at the State Department and then on to Annapolis tomorrow. And I want to thank you for coming. Wish you all the very best.
And let me know where to send the weapons for your attack on Hamas. A little joke there. I'm just kidding. I'm just a dumbass from Texas. That's a joke down in Texas. Did you hear what I said to Ehud Olmert? Told him he had a Jew name. Wasn't that funny? So after all of this, too much cappuccino perino, or as we love to call her here at the Malloy program, Spinderella, tries to jabber her way out of questions about this Annapolis Peace Talk thing, which includes Omer and Abbas, but no representative from Hamas, which is in power in Gaza. A reporter says, Dana, how does the president believe that peace can be reached without including Hamas in this equation?
The president believes there will only be one Palestinian state. And it is going to be difficult work.
Difficult
work. It's going to take some time for the Palestinians to work through the situation with Hamas right now. But they are under obligation to do that. And we'll have to work with this international community. Remember, one thing that is different about the conference tomorrow is that you have over 40 countries here, and you have Arab participation. And this agreement is going to be between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And at the end of that agreement, when they reach what they can agree on, then the world should support them.
What? When they reach what they can agree on, then the world should support them? Oh, my God, this woman just irritates the living hell out of me. What a dumb human being. I mean, what a stupid, brain-dead person. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, James Drister, writing at Daily Kos, back on Friday, under the title, Bush Sprinkles Magical Fairy Dust Over Annapolis. he writes, and I'm going to quote some of this for you. He says, there are several reasons to find the Annapolis Middle East Summit a non-starter. First, any attempt by the Bush crime family to be at all diplomatic is ridiculous. Second, even if its host, Bush, was not a completely flawed figure, the underlying reason for the summit is doomed to failure for dozens of reasons. The first being that the state of Israel is never, ever, ever going to cede land for a state of Palestine. And third, the participants in the summit have absolutely no reason to trust each other any further than they can throw each other. Now, starting with fact number one, no one should trust, ever, under any circumstances, the Bush crime family. That is merely a fact of life. The sun rises in the east, and the Bush crime family cannot be trusted. And James writes, but I realize that my view may be somewhat extreme, and some might say that at least they're finally trying. If that is your worldview, then support it, and I wish you luck. However, I will stick with my intuition and buttress it with reality and commentary, even when the commentary comes from a source that I rarely, if ever, agree with. From the Jerusalem Post and their columnist, Ms. Glick, who apparently has received a secret copy of the draft agenda. And I'll share that with you, True Seekers, as James Risser shared it with the world when we come back.
I learned my foreign policy from my old man. If a dictator's in trouble, then you give a helping hand. If you're fighting for your freedom, then I'm your man. But you'll be out of luck if you're a Palestinian.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
God. Oh. But people die because he's so damn stupid. People die. So, why the Annapolis conference with all these folks gathering in Annapolis, Maryland, at the request of George W. Bush, the great diplomat that he is, why it's a failure. James Risser says, first of all, no one should trust the Bush crime family, and if that betrays a bias or a prejudice on the part of Risser, he has a little quote here from the Jerusalem Post and their columnist, one Ms. Glick, who apparently has received a secret copy of the draft agenda. Here's what she wrote. The draft document shows that the Palestinians and the Israelis differ not only on every issue, but differ on the purpose of the document. It also shows that the U.S. firmly backs the Palestinians against Israel. As the draft document makes clear, Israel is trying to avoid committing itself to anything at Annapolis. And for their part, the Palestinians are trying to force Israel's hand by tying it to diplomatic formulas that presuppose an Israeli withdrawal to the 1949 armistice lines and an Israeli acceptance of the so-called right of return or free immigration of foreign Arabs to Israel. You get the drift already, don't you, Truth Seeker? There's more. The Palestinians are also trying to take away Israel's right to determine for itself whether to trust the Palestinians and continue making diplomatic and security concessions or not, by making it the responsibility of outside parties to decide the pace of the concessions and whether or not the Palestinians should be trusted. As the leaked draft document shows, Ms. Glick goes on, the Americans have sided with the Palestinians against Israel. Specifically, the Americans have taken for themselves the sole right to judge whether or not the Palestinians and the Israelis are abiding by their commitments and whether and at what pace the negotiations will proceed. But the Americans have shown themselves to be unworthy of Israel's trust. Let me pause here for just a moment. This is what Ms. Glick is writing in the Jerusalem Post. And by God, I beg to differ, Ms. Glick. But let me go on. The Americans have shown themselves to be unworthy of Israel's trust by refusing to acknowledge Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party's direct involvement in terrorism, and indeed the direct involvement of his official Fatah security forces in terrorism. The Americans have shown that their benchmarks for Palestinian compliance with their commitments to Israel are not necessarily based on reality. Then, too, the U.S. demands for wide-ranging Israeli security concessions to the Palestinians, even before the so-called peace conference at Annapolis, have shown that Israel's security is of little concern to the State Department, end quote. Where is this woman getting her information? Israel's security is of little concern to the State Department? What the hell is she talking about? The United States has demonstrated for 60-some years that the primary concern of the U.S. State Department, under Democrats, Republicans, Martians, it doesn't matter, has been Israel's security. But to Ms. Glick, none of that has ever that's never happened. None of it. So her entire column, then, is fraudulent. Anyone who can write for public consumption that Israel's security is of little concern to the State Department is obviously a nutball and totally divorced from reality, not just today's reality or last month's or 5 years ago or 10 or 15 or 20 or 25 or 30, but for the past 60 years. We have based our policy of initiating nuclear war on what happened to Israel back in the bad old 50s and 60s and probably even the 70s. But Ms. Glick? No, we're not the least bit concerned about Israel's security. Now, second reason, as Risser writes, that the whole thing is a joke, Israel will never cede land for a Palestinian state. And he goes on and explains why. And we just don't have the time, James, to read the whole thing. The third reason, the participants have no reason to trust each other. And he says perhaps the best parable of the hopelessness of this quaint meeting is this. Saudi Arabia and other Arab nations decided last Friday to attend next week's, or this, the one that starts tomorrow, U.S.-sponsored Middle East Peace Conference. But the Saudi foreign minister said he would not allow what he called theatrics, such as shaking hands with Israeli officials. Oh, my God.
We're not going to allow any theatrics, like shaking hands. Whenever I go to the ranch down there in Texas, Mr. Bush holds my hand as we walk among the rattlesnakes and dead bodies that he has buried there. But as far as shaking hands with the Israelis? No. That's theatrics, and we're just simply not going to do it. But let me tell you about this Saudi woman that we have sentenced to 200 lashes because she got raped.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome to your life. 25 before the hour. All right, James Risser writing at Daily Kos, explaining why, even though Bush has sprinkled magical fairy dust over Annapolis, Maryland, the so-called Middle East Peace Conference is a hoax, a sham, and a myth. It is going to go nowhere, and you need to know this so that when this thing dissolves into, further bombings or more killing or people getting pissed off and storming out, you'll understand why. First of all, no one should trust the Bush crime family. Secondly, Israel will never cede land for Palestinian state. And third, none of the participants in this have any reason to trust each other. They just don't. And as an example, the Saudis said they would. The Saudi representative, the foreign minister, said he would not allow theatrics such as handshakes with Israeli officials. Oh my God! And James adds, or this, assuming Bahrain has a representative at the summit, which I think they do. They're representatives from what, 30, 40 nations? I don't know. They're just crawling with representatives at this fake toy meeting, so George can feel like he's doing something. Bahrain's members of parliament were yesterday accused of having the blood of dead Palestinians on their hands in a blistering attack by Foreign Minister Sheikh Khalid bin Ahmad Al Khalifa. He's a Palestinian. He launched the offensive in parliament. He's a member of the Bahraini parliament. He launched the offensive in parliament after one MP said he should wash his hands with water six times and then rub them with sand after shaking hands with his Israeli counterpart, Zipporah Livni. That would be Zippy Livni. The unofficial meeting took place on the sidelines of a summit at the UN in New York last month and was yesterday condemned by members of parliament who called for severing any ties with Israel. Now, this is Bahrain. Because he shook hands, a member of the Bahrain parliament shook hands with a member of the Israeli government, Zippy Livni, that the Bahrainian should wash his hands with water six times and then rub them with sand. Oh, and then, you know, turn around in a circle, close your eyes and say, I just want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home, right? Oh, my God. So the Saudis will be there, but don't expect them to shake the hands of the Israelis. And as James Dresser points out, one might ask, why are the Saudis even showing up? No, because, you see, this is part of what the Bush crime family and their business partners do. The Saudis are providing 41% of the foreign insurgents who are blowing each other up and Americans in Iraq. They come from Saudi Arabia. We talked about this last week. The Saudis sent 15 of the 19 bombers, if you believe the official U.S. government story, that came to this country and blew the hell out of everything, including our common sense and our Constitution on September 11th, 2001. Those were Saudis, for Christ's sake. That's the reason we attacked Afghanistan, you see, and then Iraq. Anyway, Risser's conclusion: whatever happens in Maryland will be completely useless. At best, the talks will offer more false hope to Palestinians that they will indeed have a state, It will offer Israel cover for a few more years of their game of, well, if only the Palestinians would do blank or at least blank, Israel would be more than happy to give blank. It will offer the Bush crime family a legacy moment, filled with photo ops and smirking politicians from all over the planet, all there because Bush is so effing important. Or at worst, it will be, as the Jerusalem Post columnist Ms. Glick suggests, merely a ruse to get Arab state backing for that impending attack on those nasty Persians. Cue the laughter. So now you know. If you want to read this, go to Daily Kos and just find James Risser, R-I-S-S-E-R, James Risser's diary, because I only shared with you about a third of it. Don't you just want to scream sometimes? Huh? Bush talking with the Israeli Prime Minister and the one of the people who says he represents the Palestinians at the little photo op today. Sounding as though I mean, even when he had that little head scratching moment with Ehud Olmert, who probably want to reach over and just beat the hell out of him with a mezuzah, or something like that. You know, here you have George Bush saying, "Hey, I'm proud of you, proud of you." I was waiting for him to say, "Boy, proud of you, boy. You're a good Jew. You're trying to do them things over." It's. You know, when Bush was younger, anytime he got around young black children, he would, and watch him, he still does this. He'll reach down and scratch their heads. If his little black boy, you know, little grade school or whatever, Bush, as soon as Bush is within reaching distance, he reaches over there and starts scratching that little black child's head. Why does he do that? Because white males in the South, that's an old custom. You scratch a little Negro's head and you get good luck. I guess it works if you scratch the bald head of a Jew, too. Come here, I'm proud of you. Come here, bend over here. Ooh, I'm going to get three wishes now. He's such a dumbass. Telling the Israeli Prime Minister, "I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, boy." Oh, my God. All right. We gotta get. I know. Everybody's on hold. I'm coming in just a second. I've got to touch on the defeat of John Howard, Australia's prime minister for the past, oh God, I don't know, forever, right? John Howard. Saturday's election. Howard's gone, thus depriving Chucklenuts with one of his most steadfast allies, and bringing changes in Australia's foreign policy that is going to wreak havoc on U.S. foreign policy, as long as it's in the hands of the neo-Nazis. Howard, who was leader of the right-wing, they called it the Liberal Party down there, but it was no more liberal than, say, oh, I don't know, let me think of a name, Ron Paul. Howard was one of the most frequent visitors to the Bush White House and the Texas Ranch, just behind Tony Blair, King Abdullah, and Ariel Sharon. What a group, huh? Oh, my God. Now, Australia's next prime minister, the guy that handed John Howard finally his ass, is Kevin Rudd. He said Sunday in his first news conference that he had received a congratulatory call from Bush and that he, Rudd, would be visiting the United States early in the next year. Bush might visit the United States early next year, too. Who knows? Under Mr. Rudd, according to the New York Times. Under Mr. Rudd, the most notable foreign policy changes will be on the environment, nuclear issues, and Iraq! Rudd has said that his Labour Party will withdraw Australia's 550 combat troops from Iraq immediately. Also, Rudd stated unequivocally in his victory speech that Australia would ratify the Kyoto Protocol on global warming, This will leave the United States, that's us, True Seeker, this will leave us as the only industrialized country on earth not to have done so. Now, one thing you have to know about Kevin Rudd, he knows that the United States is way, 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 way far away. He also knows that U.S. foreign policy is doomed to failure. He also knows that the behemoth rising on the east, okay, the northeast, is China. Now, Rudd, the new prime minister of Australia, was once a diplomat in Beijing, and guess what? He speaks fluent Mandarin Chinese. And when Chinese President Hu Jintao of China was in Australia in September, Mr. Rudd spoke to him in Chinese. Can you imagine Bush speaking Chinese? What would he say? Egg Foo Young! Chop Suey! Remember, Bush couldn't even get off the stage. Remember that? So, what do you think is going to happen between Australian and Australian-Chinese relations? That's right. They're going to blossom. So, GM in Oregon, regarding that, wrote, Mike, it was gratifying to see that John Howard, Bush's Australian poodle, lost both his seat and the prime minister position at the same time. His constituents and the Australian people have had enough of him, his ignorance and arrogance, and his kowtowing to Bush. Too bad Americans aren't as smart as Australians. Wonder if there's any chance that Congress will overcome its fear and corruption and get rid of these criminals. Hearing the loud pop of hundreds of heads being removed from hundreds of rectums in both the House and the Senate would be music to my ears. GM in Oregon.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Prairie Drew writes, Hey Mike, there's a new word in Hebrew, leikandel. In Israeli government circles, it refers to going to a meeting that accomplishes nothing. Or, as it is becoming more widely used, it means to travel about without any purpose. It's based on the first name of Condoleezza Rice. Le Condel. Yeah, I heard about that. Regarding last thing here on the peace conference at Annapolis that Mr. Bush, the great healer, has called with all the factions in the Middle East that are real, well, except one, and that's Hamas. The Hamas leader today, once again, came up with a hard line against Israel at a conference they and the militant Islamic Jihad faction convened in Gaza. This is on the eve of the Middle East peace gathering in Annapolis. Hamas and Islamic Jihad decided to have their own. And meanwhile, Israeli right-wingers stepped up their campaign against possible concessions to the Palestinians with demonstrations in Jerusalem. You see? You see how this works? Ismail Haniyeh, the leader of Hamas in Gaza, said, Let the whole world hear us. We will not relinquish a centimeter of Palestine, and we will not recognize Israel. Now, Haniyeh is usually associated with a more pragmatic wing of the Islamic movement. But he was responding, according to the Times, to a refugee from the 1948 Arab-Israeli War who came to the podium showing the deed for land that he had left behind in what is now Israel.
Mahmoud Zahar, an influential Hamas leader in Gaza, told the gathering in Gaza City that, quote, Palestinian land is from the sea to the river. That's referring to the Jordan River, to the Mediterranean, and from the Lebanon-Syrian border in the north to the Egyptian border in the south. And he added that, quote, not a single person, not a government, not a single generation has the right to relinquish any area of Palestine. And he said that any normalization of relations would be, his words, any normalization of relations with the enemy is a treason. That's that's from the Hamas. From the Israeli right-wingers, they handed out gold ribbons, the color associated with Jerusalem, at main intersections around Israel to express opposition to any talk of dividing Jerusalem. And at least 15,000 Israelis attended a prayer session at the Western Wall in the Old City. Speakers warned the Israeli government against harming the settlement enterprise in the West Bank or of compromising over Jerusalem. Neil Epstein, a Jerusalem resident and one of a minority of adults in the crowd, said he came here from New York 7 years ago. He said, quote, my problem is, who are we dealing with? Abbas has very little power. I'm afraid of his losing the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, to Hamas. And, of course, three Palestinian militants were killed by Israeli fire today along the Israel-Gaza border. And on and on and on. But the Saudis have made it very clear there will be no theatrics like shaking hands. Oh, no theatrics like shaking hands. How about kiss, kiss, kiss? You know, the way it's done in the Middle East. Cheek, cheek, cheek. Eh, feh, no! Kissing a Jew? Kissing a Saudi? Feh! I hate that situation. I really do. I just hate it. I believe in the theory. For lack of a better term, the Rodney King theory. The Rodney King approach to diplomacy, peace, and world understanding. The Rodney King approach to disarmament. The Rodney King approach to ending all global expenditures on weaponry and destruction and death. The Rodney King approach to solving the world's problems. The Rodney King approach to attacking disease and poverty and ignorance. The Rodney King approach to liberating women from this horror that is conservative Islam and the horror that is conservative Christianity. The Rodney King approach to finding a settlement between the factions in India, the Hindus and the Muslims, who truly, truly want to kill each other. The Rodney King approach, which is simply, can't we all just get along? Yeah, 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 yeah. All right, we have a break coming here, and when we come back, we are going to take your phone calls. We are now almost two-thirds of the way through the program tonight. So if you've been waiting for this to end so you can get on to the serious events of your life, very little time left here, Truth Seekers. So we don't have any more sound. All right, no more sound from Bush or too much Cappuccino Perino. We have covered in our inimitable way the topics that we consider to be of utter importance. So now it is time to get the feedback, to listen to folks who listen to the program. So do stick around, all right? Here comes the good part of the program when we return. In the meantime, keep in mind, this is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy.
It is 7 past the hour. Regarding the Australian elections email from our friend Mark in Melbourne, he said, Mike, the big thing we have in Australia that you don't have in the U.S. is that we have a fair voting system that truly reflects the people's will. Until the U.S. fixes its broken electoral system, you're going to continue to have this dictatorial crap that you're putting up with now. Yeah, that's very true, but they'll be building snowmen in hell, Mark, when we switch to the parliamentary system. It's too difficult to suck up graft, corruption. It can still be done, but it's too difficult as opposed to the system we have. All right, excuse me. Phone calls. Let's start with Aram, who's listening in Tucson, Arizona via the internet. Hey, Aram.
Hey, Mike. It's been a little while since I've called, but I had to plug in when you said that, when I think it was you or Kathy who said that our good old Mississippi hair helmet wants to teach.
Yeah, well, that was what he said. He said one of the
go ahead. I want to hear it.
I was actually
teaching at the time, so I want to hear what the schmuck had to say.
Well, he was. It's not true. You know, it's not true. Trent Lott teaching would be like Dennis Kucinich becoming a bomber pilot. It's just not going to happen. But he said one of the things that he and his wife Trish were thinking about was his becoming a teacher. And we know that's bat squeeze. What he wants is out before this new law takes effect that says he would have to wait at least 2 years before he started getting money lobbying.
Well, with his public administration degree from Old Miss and his law degree from Old Miss,
yeah,
the fact that he's a part of the Sigma Nu fraternity, I'm sure when he can probably do very well as a barely competent history teacher. Now, I would love to see him talk about civil rights in the 1950s and the 60s and not see his skin blow up. Because what most people don't know, and I am in the Greek system, I am in a fraternity, I was when I was in college, the Sigma Nus were one of the last fraternities to allow anybody who wasn't a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant in.
Right.
The southern chapters, including Old Miss, you know, his, worked their butts off to make sure that blacks and Jews, and I'm Jewish, were denied entrance in.
Right.
So it would be a very interesting time to see this idiot teach impressionable young people about tolerance. And who am I kidding? This guy wears his sheets at night. What am I talking about?
The only tolerance
he knows is alcohol tolerance because he drinks too many martinis.
I know. Oh, it's just I suggested kind of offhandedly the same thing that Trent Lott, if anyone could teach a course on civil rights in the Deep South, it would be Trent Lott. He could start with Pascagoula, Mississippi, and work his way up from there. But, of course, it would be from a certain perspective, old Trent's course. Remember what Trent said about Strom Thurmond?
Yeah, I was about to say, if we all supported Strom Thurmond's things, wouldn't be as messed up as they are today. And then black people would still be in the back of the bus.
Right, they sure would. They sure would. All right, Aaron.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Trent Lott teaching. Oh, my God. I don't even think he could qualify at Bob Jones University. Where in the hell would he? But, yeah, like Aaron said, wasn't Trent a cheerleader too? I think Bush was.
Now, he could probably teach that.
He could teach cheerleading?
He could teach cheering.
Maybe
rah,
he wasn't.
This boom bah, hang 'em high from the trees.
Oh, God, that's not funny.
It is if you're Trent Lott.
Michael is calling from Newcastle, PA, listening via the internet. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, how you doing? I'm just sitting here drinking some cool, fancy
from Super Bean.
What are you drinking?
I think it's the Kuah Fancy Blend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got some of the Peaberry Dark.
We just got another 3 pounds.
Oh, yeah?
In the mail the other, or was it four, Kathy? Was it 4 pounds?
That's what I ordered. Like,
we're about through it.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, I'm so glad that I found this guy, or this guy found me, but anyway.
Yeah, I was glad to hear it, because I'm always looking for good coffee. I'm tired, you know, anyone who buys a gourmet coffee out, like at a Starbucks or something, even once a week, is wasting money.
That's true. That's very
true. Totally wasting money. But the reason I called, I wanted to ease your mind a little bit. You scared me when you said Dennis Kucinich did something weird, and I heard the UFO music.
Yeah.
And I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right.
But then when I heard it, I did hear his wife make that comment, and I was I was actually glad that Dennis made the comment, I guess with some conditions. I wouldn't be too – he would have to, of course, lead the ticket, because I don't think, like you've brought up many a times, Ron Paul's understanding of – government function is a little bit too, what do you call it, though?
Non-existent?
Right, unbending. I mean, here's a guy, though. Ron Paul's one of his big messages is he's against the private banking in our monetary system and would much rather have our government bureaucracy, i.e. the Treasury, take care of something so big and important. So he does, I guess, in some issues understand we need to regulate certain things.
Well, what is... No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to make the reason, and it's funny he's saying this, because I've actually been rooting for them to do this. The one obvious reason is everyone else, I don't believe them.
Yeah.
So give me two guys who at least will open up the dialogue, because what will happen first of all, we both know that it would probably be impossible. They're going to get destroyed in the media. But if they actually were able to break through to actually get some voice, it would remind people that, look, I mean, back in the day, when we started the country, if I'm correct, the president was the one with the most votes, and then his opponent, who disagreed with him, got the second amount. He became vice president until we changed it.
You know, I don't know about that. It sounds reasonable to me.
You know, John Adams, and all the way up until the 1800s, I believe, the second vote-getter always, so it would be a Bush-Gore, I mean, imagine that, Bush-Gore administration, but it's you can see why it has value. But here's the thing.
No, it would have been a Gore-Bush.
Well, there you go.
If they would have counted if they would have counted the votes.
That's true. But what they can say, though, because of course people would say, you know, how do you even debate the issues if you're both on different sides? And what they can easily say is, look, we disagree because we're running to lead a democracy and not a dictatorship. So what matters are the things we do agree on, which is, one, honesty with the Constitution, two, accountability, three, America's interest over private agendas when it comes to foreign policy, economics. And that way, even if, let's say, Ron was pushing a strong libertarian issue or Dennis was countering him, that debate would at least be open. It wouldn't be hidden. I mean, we know privatization is taking over and mercenaries and horrible wars, and a lot of this stuff isn't even able to be talked about. Those two, at least, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
well, no, you make good points, but if Kucinich wants to toy with the idea, if
right.
for no other reason, just to toss it out there,
good
get
point.
People thinking, if he wants to toy with the idea of running with a Republican, then pick a Republican. Pick somebody like Olympia Snow. Pick somebody like Susan Collins.
You know why I like Paul even better? I would rather him pick maybe, I mean, even if he picked a Gore, if he picked Lou Dobbs, if he picked you, if he picked John Stewart, anybody that isn't an establishment person I would be fine with, because at least there's more accountability. But I like Paul because he brings him any third party is going to have strong grassroots. We need college kids getting really excited about the candidates, and we know both of the major parties are screwy, so at least these two guys could at least force the issue. They, you know, how far they get, who knows, but that's the least of my worries. My worries is a very uniform administration with the agenda of, you know where we're going in this country.
Right. Well, Michael, you make some interesting points with the Ron Paul thing, and I know he has a dedicated base out there, and I certainly respect that base, but I just think if Kucinich wants a Republican,
even for the sake of argument, there are Republicans to have, and I don't think Ron Paul is really a Republican. But it's a good idea. Thanks, Michael. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you strong enough to be my man? Are you strong enough?
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Let us go immediately back to your phone calls here. Bob is calling from Seattle, listening via the Internet. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Great. Say, Mike, you know, I'm tired of being intimidated by this fascist right-wing administration.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, instead of playing defense, I'd like to play offense. And I will pledge several thousand dollars of my own money on your show. If we could get some organization that would somehow bring war criminal indictments in The Hague so that we could actually, whether this happens or not, we could at least have an indictment pending over the heads of these war criminals that we have here, these neocon fascists that are running our government, that have overtaken our government, that are terrorizing our population, that if we don't hold into account, my God, the future is dismal. So I want to pledge money. I will pledge $5,000 of my money today. If you could use your show as a vehicle to get the lawyers, attorneys, the ACLU, somehow some organization that would bring indictments of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Douglas Fife, Richard Pearl, Wolfowitz, all of these PNAC criminals to justice so we could hold them in The Hague, hold them like the Nuremberg criminals that they are, and we could indict them. We could show the world that these are shameful criminal people that have
all right.
are bloodthirsty liars.
All right, Bob, it's an excellent idea, but you realize you're repeating yourself, sort of like I do,
okay.
because you are as concerned about it as I am, and like you, pal, I don't have a clue as to what to do. I don't think it takes money. What it takes is somebody somewhere, probably not in this country, who shares our perspective.
But Mike, you have lawyers. You have people listening to your program.
Yeah.
If they could, I'm pleading with them. I know that Ellen Ratner, her brother, Mr. Ratner, heads an organization of attorneys. I know that the indictment against Rumsfeld in the French courts were just dropped. But if we could go to The Hague, if we could go to the United Nations, if we could hold this government accountable for the treaties of Geneva and the United Nations treaties that they've signed, if we could then put them to account and hold them in other words, get indictments, even though they're not accountable, at least let them know that the American people know that these are war criminals, that we are not going along with them, that we are with the Australian people.
Well, Bob, there. I think there is a better way to do this, and one that is possibly more effective, and that is impeachment. Remember, impeachment is a presentation of evidence. I think if the United States House, if the U.S. House of Representatives would get serious and begin impeachment proceedings against this crime family, then the rest of the world would certainly take notice. As far as criminal indictments for war crimes, to me that's step two. Step one, it is very difficult to indict sitting heads of state. They come covered with more immunity than a 14th century knight in armor. It's just there's no way to penetrate it. So I think all the world needs to see is the House Judiciary Committee start investigating how many articles of impeachment should be levied against Bush and Cheney, and then begin taking testimony on live television under oath, and let the American public and the world see that we still have a constitutional system that does provide relief when we have an administration this criminal and this corrupt. But I certainly understand your passion and your desire to see this country rescued from these rat bastards. And I don't disagree at all with any of the charges you mentioned tonight. They're corrupt, they're filthy, they're war criminals, they're mass killers. I can't think of an administration involved in more, an American administration involved in more criminal activity. I don't know. Maybe there were. Maybe after the Civil War. Maybe sometime between the Revolution in this country and maybe there were more corrupt administrations, but I can't think of one. But it begins with impeachment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
They're universal values. They're not American values or, European values. They're universal values. And those values, being universal, ought to be applied everywhere.
Jesus. All right, back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Seattle, listening via the Internet. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, why I called has kind of changed a bit. A lot of good points. A lot of good people.
Yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen when you're on hold for an hour and a half. I'm sorry about that.
Well, you have a timer too.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on my boat, between 5,000 and 6,000 feet across the water from the end of the rails for the white train. I don't know if you know what the white train is.
I don't.
Those are the trains that carry the wipe out a continent nuclear missiles.
Oh, okay.
And the vehicle for those is made by Boeing.
Yeah.
Our lovely local company here in the Northwest.
Yes.
In Kent, Washington.
Yes.
And Raytheon brings them the brain, and JPL brings them the butt end to push them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where to get the stuff to put in them, but they assemble those at the Bangor Trident Nuclear Submarine Base and at a little place across the bay here called Indian Island.
Uh-huh.
And there are two boats the size of Montana here right now, and the lights are on, and somebody's home.
Yeah.
The gantry cranes are lit. It's a little seaport, I should say, like Oh, it's like the Port of Seattle or Long Beach or Alameda.
So what is being loaded from the white train to these big boats?
Intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Oh, okay.
That's what they have.
Yeah.
That's what they do. White train is the terminology used that transports the these devices. A guy laid down on the tracks and wouldn't get up, and they drove over him, cut his legs off.
Yes, sure.
Stuff like that.
Right.
And bombs and bullets and fuel. And this place was kind of an out of business park after Vietnam until George Bush came in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's amazing that people don't realize what's going on here. When we sit here and watch them, we know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
Now there's the McCord Air Force Base. Is Air Force, and they go all air, and then Whidbey Island Naval Air Station is based off the boats. And what they do is they use the LSDs and other large transports, and they go out front, which is boat speak for out in the water in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out the straits, and they go tie up with giant bumpers next to aircraft carriers and submarines and whatnot, and they offload their stuff 200 miles out where nobody knows what they're doing. And they have sent, I would imagine that who and what is in the Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean and the east end of the Mediterranean is fully loaded and ready to go. And I think that what they're doing right now is they're running giant supplies of backups for that.
Well, you're just screwing up my whole evening here, Joe. You understand that, don't you?
Well, I don't mean to. it just amazes me, and you know, and I told the screener my original question is why so much attention. I'm a long time listener, first time caller,
uh-huh.
And I greatly appreciate most of everything that is done. From you and all the other Air America guys and et cetera, et cetera. But I just don't understand why so much attention is paid to the quote-unquote war when there isn't a war. It's an occupation,
right.
And it's a clust and all this stuff going on and this agenda.
Well, the quick answer to that, Joe, is I think the reason there is a lot of attention paid to the occupation, and we always refer to it that way, well, not always, 95% of the time, is that it's an indication of two things. The ugliness of U.S. imperialism and aggression where it concerns this demand for diminishing resources like oil. That's A. B., the psychosis that is eaten, it's holes into the brains of Bush and Cheney and the rest of these people. They're truly mad, truly insane. And the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War are examples of this the psychotic behavior. So when we and the third thing, and I don't mean these things are in order of declining importance. They are just three things. The third thing is the deaths of all the people involved, American military and Iraqi civilians, needlessly. There is no reason. There has never been a valid reason for the deaths that has been that have been caused by our invasion and subsequent occupation, whether those deaths are Iraqis or U.S. Military people, U.S. civilians, Iraqi civilians. There's never been a justification, a rationale, or a reason, and nothing, nothing, nothing. So I think that's the reason it's talked about. It's the spear point. The Bush behavior is the spear point to what you're talking about, and that is the possibility of thermonuclear war somewhere in the United States launched by or initiated by the United States. So I think that's the reason it's talked about. I know that's the reason it's talked about here. I can't speak for Air America hosts, and by the way, I'm not connected to Air America in any way, shape, or form. Haven't been for over a year. But So I hope that answers it for you. That's the kind of abbreviated answer. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate. And no, you're right. They're not the least bit interested in democracy in Iraq or Bush and his gang, democracy anywhere. Every time they offer up democracy, weird stuff happens, like what happened in Lebanon, like what happened in the Palestinian-occupied territories. Every time democracy is offered by this gang of bastards, the wrong people get elected. And then they have to go in and start their murder process all over again. So no, Bush and the rest of these bastards are no more interested in democracy than Islamic militants are interested in democracy, or Christian fundamentalists are interested in democracy. Democracy is poison to fundamentalists of all stripes and to incipient fascists, which is what Bush and his group are all about. So there you have it. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Gee, Mike, after listening to what Joe have to say, I think I'm going to go stick my head in the sand.
Well, we probably all should.
Boy. What I really called about tonight was this. I got a dose of the FBI's investigation into the good Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska.
Right.
And in that conversation, they were talking about four people. One was Trent Lott. Second was Dennis Hastert. Third was Larry Craig. The fourth, I couldn't write fast enough, but there's a fourth name there. Mm-hmm. And about a month ago, Dennis Hastert was talking about retiring by the end of the year. And I thought, well, you know, maybe...
Now, wait, let me ask you. These are all people involved in the criminal investigation of Ted Stevens?
Yeah, according to the program Now on PBS.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead.
And there
Ooh,
was
fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a good group, I got to tell you. And like I said, about a month ago, Dennis Hastert, because he's around these parts, was talking about retiring by the end of the year. And I thought, well, gee whiz, you know, he lost his speaker seat. But, well, maybe he just got tired, or maybe they wanted to line up somebody to take his place before the next election. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of rolling around in my head. And then today, a second name on that list just announced that he was going to retire by the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
And that's Trent Lott.
Right.
And I thought, oh, imagine that. There seems to be a trend here. well, Larry Craig is Larry Craig. What can I tell you? Right. I wish I could remember that fourth person. But one of the things that they were talking about, one of the things that they mentioned that just absolutely grabbed me, the crowd that they were dealing with, the senator, Ted Stevens, but also the state reps and whatnot from the state of Alaska, mm-hmm. Were so damn arrogant, they made themselves matching baseball caps with the letter CBC embroidered on it.
And what does that stand for?
Corrupt Bastards Club.
Oh, my God.
Does that just, you know, kind of grab you there, fella?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does, Marge. Now I know what I'm going to be looking for tomorrow. Marge, I got to leave it there. We got a break here. But I know what I'm going to be looking for because I didn't hear the story. And I figured these guys are retiring before the new restrictions kicked in about how quickly they can begin lobbying the House or the Senate. But I hope your story turns out to be something just big and massive and smelly and full of worms and dead stuff, because it means that these bastards might go to jail.
I was holding on to my granddad's hand. He was pointing to the promised land that lay beyond the reservation road. He said, don't make a promise you won't keep. Don't betray the earth beneath your feet. And we walked on the reservation road.
10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix and answered your phone calls. Billy Foster who, not sure what he does, still not sure. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Thanks to everybody for the program tonight. Ben is calling from Winnipeg, Canada, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, hey. How's it going, Mike?
Going fine. How are you?
Awesome. Just thanks for that great program, yeah. I just heard that other caller that you had there that was talking about taking this administration to The Hague and kind of like having the international community taking on the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not see that at all. It's kind of an American problem. And it's the American people who let it all happen. And this administration are criminals. The whole world knows that. I'm a German national living in Canada for 1.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if you talk to educated people in Canada or in Germany. Like, people know.
Right.
These people are criminals. They belong in court, into an American court. You don't want to see the international community taking on the problem because it wouldn't be very friendly
mm-hmm.
towards the American people and the American nation, not like, people in the world don't differentiate between this government and America or the U.S. as a country.
That's
they
true.
They only see the... Pardon me?
I said that's true.
So, if the world as such really takes on kind of the American problem, you don't want to see that happen. Nobody in America.
Right.
So...
Well, I agree with you, Ben. It is an American problem, and that's why I responded by saying that we have to remove Bush and Cheney from office, and if we do not, if the leaders of the U.S. House of Representatives decide not to, if the American public decides not to apply pressure to the extent that Nancy Pelosi has to allow impeachment proceedings to go ahead, then history is going to judge us in the same way. In a manner of speaking, the same way that the questions were asked about the people of Germany in the 30s. How did they allow someone like Hitler to assume power without, you know, he assumed power legally? And so did Bush. So the same questions are going to be asked, and it's a shame, but you're right. It is not up to the international community to remove these people. It is up to the American public.
Mike, with all due respect, I do not think it is about removing these people from power. I like that you kind of keep the talk alive on impeachment. It is important to remind these people that there is such a thing as the public and, like, democratic process like impeachment. But practically, it's a bit late in the turn here. They are going to be gone anyways, and they are criminals. It's not about removing them from office. They are criminals. It's about taking them to court and putting them in jail where they belong to.
Well, Ben, see, under our system, they have immunity from prosecution in criminal courts as long as they're in office. What has to come first is removal from office, and that would be impeachment and conviction in the Senate. Then criminal charges can be talked about, but you may not...
Yep.
You may not understand that. They can't be charged with criminal activity. I don't even know if George Bush were to shoot someone dead in while he's president. I don't think he is subject to criminal prosecution. He would be subject to removal for high crimes and misdemeanors. But so that's the reason step A is impeachment. Step B is conviction in the Senate. Step C would be indictment on criminal charges once they have lost their protection as being the president, vice president of the U.S. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Partially. I do not know the U.S. American laws that exactly.
Right.
But there have been criminal charges against other protected government officials in other countries, and there always is a way to exclude them from prosecution. If the offenses or accusations are serious enough, but usually that again goes to parliament, and once you have
once you have enough people voting for taking their taking them to court, that would be the same as having enough people for impeachment. That is correct in that matter.
Well, that's the point. I understand different systems in different countries. I got that part, Ben. But one of the reasons that our system was set up this way was to prevent charges, criminal charges, being filed against a sitting president or vice president simply because someone didn't like them, or charges of that were not true could be brought. You know, you don't have to be guilty of a crime to have charges filed against you. There has to be a certain amount of evidence. And I think the framers of the Constitution realized that in order to protect the executive branch of this government, there had to be immunity. And by the same token, to make sure that if crimes were committed, they could be removed from office and then face the state courts or federal courts. That is what impeachment and trial by the Senate is all about. So there is a process that has to be gone through, and unless the American public is willing to go through it, it's simply not going to happen. But I understand what you're saying, Ben, and I do agree with you. Thanks a lot for checking in, pal. All right, we'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Behave yourselves. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.